Welcome to Teleforum, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President, General Counsel, and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of practice group Teleforum calls, become a Federalist Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Teleforum conference call. This afternoon, June 23rd, we discuss Courthouse Steps decision, Cedar Point Nursery v. Hasid. My name is Guy DeSanctis, and I'm Assistant Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are fortunate to have with us Glenn Faugh, attorney, Pacific Legal Foundation. After our speaker gives his opening remarks, we will turn to you, the audience, for questions. So be thinking of those as we go along and have them in mind for when we get to that portion of the call. With that, thank you for being with us today. When the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you so much. It's great to be back on. And fortunately, we have some very positive news to announce. Earlier this morning, the Supreme Court of the United States handed down what I believe to be one of the biggest cases this term and one of the biggest property rights cases of the last decade. And that is its decision in Cedar Point Nursery versus Hasid. In this case, I am very pleased to be working on the litigation team with my colleagues, Joshua Thompson, who argued the case, and Chris Kieser and Damian Schiff. We represent two California growers, Cedar Point Nursery, a grower in Northern California that plants strawberry plants, and also Fowler Packing Company, a business in Fresno that specializes in mandarin oranges and table grapes. The challenge in this case actually started in February 2016 when we launched this case in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of California. We challenged a California access regulation that allowed labor organizations and allowed union organizers to the ability to go on the private property of every agricultural business in California for 3 hours per day and 120 days per year. And this was applied to our clients in some very egregious ways. So for example, Cedar Point, during a busy harvest season in 2015, union organizers came unannounced at 5:30 in the morning, worked their way through the trim sheds with bullhorns, and actually intimidated and scared many of the workers during a peak harvest season in 2015. So we challenge this regulation as a taking under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution. And the central question in this case, and what makes this case so important, is whether this taking is a per se physical taking or a regulatory taking. And that question is really critical because a physical taking invokes a categorical rule in which the government is obligated to pay just compensation. And we didn't even allege a regulatory taking claim because under a multi-factor balancing framework in regulatory taking cases, the government can literally take millions of dollars in value, deprive the property owner of millions of dollars in value, and not even have to provide a penny in just compensation. So our claims were actually rejected at the district court and then again at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Both of those courts held that this is a regulatory taking subject to a multi-factor balancing test. And since we did not plead that it was a regulatory taking, our case had to be dismissed. Now, the panel decision in the Ninth Circuit actually involved a dissent arguing that we should have a chance to prove our claims. And we petitioned for a rehearing in bank. And what the in bank panel, although it declined to rehear this case in bank, garnered a very positive opinion. A dissent from denial in bank, which which was authored by Judge Ikuda and joined by seven other judges in the Ninth Circuit, which said that, you know, this is subject to the categorical rule and should be given per se analysis. So we then petitioned to the Supreme Court. It was granted, the petition was granted in November of last year. And my colleague Joshua Thompson, as I mentioned, argued this case in March. The Supreme Court decision this morning was very favorable, adopted many of the arguments that we raised in our brief, and it held that a physical taking, or actually a regulation that involves physical occupation and a physical invasion of private property, and a regulation that really limits a property owner's right to exclude, amounts to a physical taking under the Fifth Amendment. This was, as we argued, backed by decades of Supreme Court precedent, going back to cases like Portsmouth Harbor, which involved a government firing of cannons over private property, and all the way up to Nolan versus California Coastal Commission, which was actually PLF's, this was PLF's 13th win before the Supreme Court of the United States. Nolan versus California Coastal Commission was the first PLF win before the Supreme Court of the United States in 1987. And in that case, the court held that a California demand that private property owners essentially give up an easement on their private property in order to be able to rebuild their beachfront property was an unconstitutional condition. And included in that analysis was the fact that if the government had just taken that easement outright, it would have been a per se physical taking subject to the just compensation requirement. So the government's, or actually I should say the Ninth Circuit's reasoning in saying that this was a regulatory taking was sort of odd in that it said, it distinguished Nolan on the ground that Nolan allowed for 24/7 365 access. And in this case, the access is limited to 3 hours per day, 120 days per year. But as the Supreme Court pointed out in today's opinion, the facts of Nolan, the beach was not even accessible 365 days per year in Nolan. And even if it had, the takings clause is not so feeble to where the government can just avoid its duty to pay just compensation just by limiting access to, say, 364 days per year or 23 hours out of each day. I think the Ninth Circuit's rationale in this case, in the opinion below, was so extreme that even the government, the California ARB, abandoned that position in its response brief. It said that this is a regulatory taking, but it didn't necessarily argue that a physical occupation had to be 365 days out of the year, 24/7, in order to be a physical taking. But it also did not draw a line for determining what would be a regulatory taking, what would be a physical taking in its response brief. The Supreme Court opinion today also distinguished Pruneyard, which is a case that was the primary case relied upon by the government below. And in Pruneyard, it distinguished Pruneyard on the grounds that in Pruneyard, the property there was a shopping center that was open to the public at large. So you did not have the same right to exclude. In fact, the property owner in Pruneyard did not typically limit its property or exercise its right to exclude against anybody. In this case, these are private businesses. They're only open to the workers on business grounds. So the right to exclude is much, much stronger in that case. And I think there's a world of difference between this type of property and the sort of public place of public accommodation that was at issue in Pruneyard. So I think the court correctly addressed the Pruneyard, or the court correctly distinguished the Pruneyard decision. There is also the decision in NLRB versus Babcock and Wilcox, which sort of did a sort of balancing analysis between the private property rights of businesses and also a union's right to, or I guess the worker's right to learn of, union, the right to join a union. And the court correctly distinguished Babcock on grounds that Babcock involved was a case involving statutory interpretation. It didn't involve a takings claim. It didn't say anything about the takings issue that have been presented. And I think, as Judge Kavanaugh noted, in this case, we would have won even under the Babcock approach, because the employees at both Cedar Point Nursery and Fowler Packing are accessible off-site to union organizers. In fact, union organizers attempted and were able to speak to a lot of the employees off-site. So the court also correctly dealt with Babcock. In line with those two decisions, Pruneyard and Babcock, the court turned to a sort of parade of horribles that were raised by the dissent and also by the government at the merit stage. We don't think there's much merit to those parade of horribles. We invoke several avenues for distinguishing them, and the court adopted all of them. So, for example, there are background principles of property rights. So, if one did not have a background principle or one did not have a right to exclude certain others, for example, government inspectors at common law, then that right to exclude is not a part of, a property owner's property interest. But here, there was no common law analog to union organizers being able to access private property for their private purposes for 3 hours per day, 120 days per year. And so the court correctly recognized that this regulation impinged on the property rights the property owner's common law right to exclude unwanted third parties. It also, addressed many of the inspection cases by using the Fourth Amendment. Because a property owner traditionally had no right to exclude an official that was actually engaged in a reasonable search, government searches that are consistent with the Fourth Amendment intuitively cannot be said to take any property right from landowners. There were other ways for distinguishing many of the examples raised by respondents in their amici. I won't go through all of them, but notable one other notable one that was raised by the Chamber of Commerce amicus brief authored by former Judge Michael McConnell was that, there's a long line of cases holding that when the government conditions the grant of a benefit, such as a permit, on allowing access for reasonable health and safety inspections, that might be constitutional as a constitutional condition, as long as it meets the nexus and rough proportionality requirements enunciated by the Supreme Court in cases like Nolan and Dolan. So the chief's majority opinion for the court was joined by Justices Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, Thomas, and Barrett. Judge Kavanaugh also wrote a separate opinion saying what I said earlier, that there was another avenue for plaintiffs to win in this case, which was that that under the balancing test established by Babcock, we would win under that test as well. But I think the primary reason we win is by applying the per se physical takings analysis. Justice Breyer authored a dissenting opinion joined by Justices Sotomayor and Kagan, in which Justice Breyer stated his view that this should be considered under the multi-factor balancing test of Penn Central. But one interesting part about Justice Breyer's opinion that I noticed was, I think he views, he calls the Penn Central balancing test flexible and views that as a feature and not a bug. But on the ground practice, as a lot of property attorneys know, The multi-factor balancing test under Penn Central is notoriously unfavorable for property owners. I've seen cases where a property owner lost 95% of value and did not receive a penny in compensation. So that's just another reason why this is such a big case for property rights and property owners across the United States, in that it establishes that the per se physical taking doctrine applies and the government has a duty to compensate the property owner for any taking of property that's analogous to the taking in this case. So, you know, the upshot of this case, you know, I think there is a lot to be litigated in future cases, but it is a very big case for property rights, and it's a big win for liberty. I think this is one of the biggest wins for individual liberty this term. Property rights is obviously central to the notion of individual liberty in the United States, and this case vindicates important property rights. And with that, I will open it up for questions.
Thank you for that. We'll now go to audience questions. While we wait for our first question, is there anything else? Oh, never mind. We have our first question now.
Good afternoon, Josh Baker, down in Norfolk, Virginia. I was curious about whether you think the court would have ruled differently if there had not been a prior physical entry onto the property at issue, meaning would the court have gotten to the same conclusion if, as you kind of read the opinion, they talk about the right that was conferred on the unions, but if they hadn't actually exercised that right in the past, do you think we get to a different result?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think it's a difficult question. I think it does make a difference here that this is a regulation that has been on the books for decades, and the union organizers in this case actually did enter the private property of Cedar Point and also attempted to access the private property of Fowler Packing Company. You know, I think that, you know, if there were a new regulation and a property owner would be entitled to file a lawsuit alleging that if it's clear that the regulation takes away the property owner's right to exclude, I feel like it would be proper for the property owner to file a case right away, even before the physical invasion happens. But I think, as your question noted, that is a more difficult case. And in this case, this is a regulation that has been on the books for decades, and access was actually taken against Cedar Point, and was attempted access was taken against both of our clients.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. And before we get to the next question, I also wanted to add, I forgot to mention this during the original talk, but I did want to give a lot of thanks to the amicus briefs that were filed in support of the petitioners in this case. There are much too many to name, but there were ones filed by the Mountain States Legal Foundation, by the California Farm Bureau, by a group of 11 states led by Oklahoma, and many others, including the U.S. Chamber. So I did want to give a shout out to the people who filed in support of our brief, both at the merits and the petition stage. I think they really, I've read all of them. They all raised very unique and thoughtful arguments. And I think the court's opinion was shaped by many of those arguments.
Thank you. Next question.
Thanks so much for that summary. I was curious if you could maybe shed light on what kinds of further government regulatory actions you expect this decision to help PLF or others push back on looking ahead, in terms of how this helps limit future government assertions of authority or limitations on private property rights.
Yeah, certainly. That is certainly a very interesting question. It would be, I would say laws that are analogous to the access regulation would be analyzed under the physical per se taking rubric. So, you know, if there are other laws, I haven't really done a survey of all of the other similar laws on the books, but, you know, laws that do allow for, say, third party organizations to come onto the private property of property owners without the property owner's consent. I think the key point that the decision today establishes is that, you know, even if the occupation itself or the right to occupation itself is not 365/24/7, it could still take away a property owner's right to exclude in a meaningful way and would still be subject to the per se takings analysis.
Thank you for that question and answer. In the meantime, is there anything else you'd like to discuss while we wait for another question?
Yeah, well, I think one other thing I wanted to add was, you know, in this case, like in many of our cases, I feel like our clients are the heroes in the story. You know, as attorneys, we make the legal arguments, we, you know, engage in briefing, but the clients are really the people who are affected by these laws, and they can tell their stories about how it affects their right to earn a living. And, you know, they're the ones who are brave enough because, you know, most Americans, I think, naturally don't get involved with lawsuits. So our clients are brave enough to stand up for their constitutional rights. You know, we've suffered many losses, like I just said, on the way. Our claims were rejected at the district court, rejected at the circuit court. Our petition for rehearing in bank was denied. So I think it just speaks to the relentlessness and confidence of our clients and also my colleagues here at Pacific Legal Foundation that we were able to stick this out for almost 6 years. And, you know, suffered several losses along the way. But we were confident that the arc of justice is long, but it bends towards liberty. And, you know, I'm happy to finally be able to announce that we got a favorable decision today.
Thank you. Yeah, it seems at this time that we don't have any more questions. So if there's anything else you'd like to say to close after that, or if you're ready to wrap things up, either way.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to emphasize that this is such a big case for liberty. We're very pleased with the court's decision and the court's emphasis on the importance of private property rights and the right to exclude. And, you know, obviously beyond property rights, Pacific Legal Foundation also litigates cases involving separation of powers, equality before the law, economic liberty and free speech. And we're looking forward to continuing our pursuit for individual liberty in all of those areas.
Thank you. Well, on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our expert, Wen Fa, for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. And I want to thank our audience for calling in and participating. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fed-soc.org. As always, keep an eye on our website and your emails for announcements about upcoming teleforum calls and virtual events. Thank you all for joining us today. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teleforum, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. For more information about the Federalist Society, the practice groups, and to become a Federalist Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.